This is The Science Show on ABC Radio National, where paranoia, especially at this time of year, has become an art form. Now, psychiatrists study paranoia and schizophrenia, but psychologists not quite so much, which is why Professor Daniel Freeman of Oxford is such an interesting investigator.
Well, yes, I was first working as a psychologist with people with schizophrenia. And at that time, it's actually quite rare for psychologists to work with people with schizophrenia. It was very much thought that it was a sort of organic brain disorder and that psychological processes perhaps had much less to do with the problems. And I was particularly interested in the experience of paranoia when people had unfounded ideas that others were deliberately trying to harm them in some way, trying to spread a conspiracy or to physically harm them, or that everyone was against the person. And really, I started off by taking the idea, well, that actually perhaps this doesn't just occur with people with severe mental illness, but maybe there's a continuum in the general population, just as there is for phobias. So, you know, many of us have some fear of heights and a few of us have very severe fears. And I thought that was actually quite likely with paranoia. So I did some experimental studies in the general population showing that, in fact, paranoia was quite common in the general population. And some of those studies was using virtual reality, so presenting people with a neutral social scene in virtual reality, so a train ride. It was very neutral, and showing that actually about one in three of the general population saw hostility from the computer characters.
They actually inferred that someone was after them, even though the them didn't exist.
Well, they were thinking that, for example, that some characters were staring at them to make them upset, or that some of them were trying to harm them in some way if they could. They knew they were in a virtual environment, but they still had some of the thoughts that they had in day-to-day life. And in fact, it correlated. So the people who had suspicions in virtuality also were more likely to report them in day-to-day life. And so this is fascinating. So I've also looked at some epidemiological data sets for the nation in Britain, and that again showed there's a distribution in the population of paranoia, just like there is for anxiety and depression, that many of us have a few suspicious thoughts and a few people have many. There's no sort of them and us. It's not that most people don't have paranoid thoughts and a few people have many. It seems that they're evenly distributed across the population, or, you know, many of us have them much more than was previous thought. And actually, there's also evidence that societies that are perhaps more unequal, that have less social cohesion, are also societies where there's a bit more suspicion in the general population. So paranoia certainly can be a problem for an individual, and I work in hospitals and see people who have severe experiences, but also it's perhaps a marker of the health of a society, the levels of mistrust within it.
So you can actually see some common characteristic about where people come from, where they live, and some of their social histories that begin to make sense in terms of this delusion.
Yeah, I think in the paranoia spectrum, it's quite clear that you're more likely to have paranoid thoughts if you're younger and that you live in cities or are raised in cities, for example. It's also linked to taking illicit substances such as cannabis. But as a psychologist, what I'm particularly interested is in that people who tend to worry more, people who aren't sleeping so well, people who feel more miserable about themselves, are also more vulnerable to paranoid thoughts. So in one really interesting longitudinal study we've just finished recently, we looked at 2,500 people in the general population, followed them up over 18 months, and the people initially who didn't have paranoid thoughts but had insomnia had a 3 times greater risk of subsequently developing low-level paranoid thoughts, which is, you know, first time this has been examined and first time it's been found.
Lack of sleep does that.
It's one of the factors, it seems, and it's probably not so surprising because when we don't sleep so well, we feel more anxious and we feel more depressed. And when we're more anxious, we anticipate threat. And when we're depressed, we also feel a bit vulnerable to ourselves. So it's just another step on to making us also think that perhaps we might be the target of others' hostility.
Well, that's very interesting because I woke up at 4 last night and I'm sure my IQ is 10 points down.
Well, sleep has so many effects. I mean, there's certainly evidence. It makes us miserable, makes us depressed, and it probably affects our frontal lobes, which are responsible for some of our higher level reasoning. And also, of course, if you don't sleep so well, you just feel odd and different. It's a bit like having a hangover. And when we're in that state, we can misinterpret it. So sometimes we might go out and go, well, I'm feeling dreadful because I'm, you know, not sleepy or I'm stressed. But sometimes we might actually find the explanation in the way others are looking at us or the way other people are reacting to us.
Is it like many of these syndromes of the mind that underneath is a kind of useful thing? In other words, it used to be quite handy to be wary just in case. But if you rank it up a bit, if you take it to a level that is counterproductive, then it becomes a sort of disease syndrome.
I think that's an excellent explanation. I think that's right. Every day we make decisions whether to trust or mistrust people, whether to, you know, share a confidence with someone or hand over our credit card. And it's adaptive. And of course, there are dangerous situations. We sometimes should be wary. But it's very hard sometimes to be sure about the intentions of another person. So it's quite error prone. And therefore, when we make errors, that's on the paranoia spectrum. And of course, if people have been bad to us in the past, we're even more likely to jump to that conclusion, even when it's not the case.
Now, it just so happens you mentioned cannabis before. We've had on one of our programmes, Occam's Razor, a bit of a standoff between at least two people on whether there is a link between smoking cannabis and psychosis, who knows, even schizophrenia. One person says that the studies show practically nothing. Another says there's a clear indication. Do you have an opinion?
I think my opinion is that it certainly can induce paranoid thoughts when you're taking it in some people. And that, I think the evidence shows that if you take it at a very young age, perhaps before the age of 14, that that actually probably puts you at risk of the later development of schizophrenia. But clearly it's not inevitable. Many, many people smoke cannabis and many people smoke cannabis without having these sorts of effects. But I think it is a factor in some cases. There is no single cause of psychosis. I think there's multiple factors often interacting. But I think cannabis is probably one of them.
Finally, when your book Paranoia came out, what was the reaction both in public and amongst the profession?
I think that it certainly initiated discussion. Particularly, we argued that paranoia may be on the rise, and I think that really got people discussing. And also, I think that the word paranoia is just generally in the last few years a lot more used, not just because of the book, but because I think of events happening in our society. It's a term that we're just using and thinking about a lot more. And it links into this idea of social cohesion, which is very important.
So, implying, of course, that social cohesion is diminishing and therefore paranoia, as you'd expect, is increasing.
That's right, exactly. So the sort of irony that we're all sort of living more in cities and being more close together, but the closer we get, actually, we seem to get further away and more mistrustful of people at a psychological level. So I think it's an important topic where we have to think about, you know, how do we increase trust in our societies and at an individual level?
Daniel Freeman is Professor of Clinical Psychology at Oxford, and his conclusions about the burgeoning of paranoia in our ever more crowded cities bear reflecting on.